This is Doctoring Up Design, a lively, interactive, and educational series presented by Design Hardware and held in their ever-evolving showroom on 3rd Street in Los Angeles. Doctoring Up Design was created to address your pain points in the constantly changing world of design and architecture. Doctoring Up Design features the most knowledgeable and creative designers, architects, manufacturers, and product designers in the business to help you build a healthy and strong design practice. Today on the show, you are going to hear from Sam Ortiz, president of Baba Antique Wooden Floors. This 33-year-old company operates from their 90-acre farm in Pittsboro, North Carolina, and you are going to hear a tale about antique and old-growth material that is handcrafted into spectacular once-in-a-generation flooring that can be artfully paired to any design style you or your designer can imagine. What makes Baba so special? Keep listening. I was introduced to you through Michelle and the team over at Design Hardware. Saw the product, and I'm in love with what you do, man. So do me a favor.
Yeah.
Give me the origin story. Start from the beginning. How did you get here? How did you get here with this?
So this is kind of an interesting story. So my uncle, he passed away about, it's been almost 7 years now, but he started this company and it's been almost like 40 years now. And he started it really by accident. So this is kind of a funny story. He's an architect by trade. And so this is, like I said, 40 years now. One of his good buddies called him up and he knew my uncle, he had a little bit of money to him at this time. And he called him up and he said, Hey, John, he said, I've got a buddy of mine that's got this heart pine lumber. And keep in mind, 40 years ago, nobody sold reclaim. It really wasn't even a thing. So he said, I've got a buddy of mine. I think it was in South Carolina. He's got some lumber. We can turn it into flooring. It's this reclaimed lumber. Uncle didn't know anything about it, but because he was an architect by trade and he's from New York, he's like, well, you know what? Let's do this. I can go up to New York. I'll go buy some architects and see if they're interested in it. So they bought this material, didn't really know what to do with it, didn't have anything set up to really run it. But so before they even ran the flooring, my uncle went up to New York and he started just going by architects' places. And they saw just the pictures of it and he sold it. I don't know. He had several thousand feet. He sold it instantly. So he came down, he came back down to North Carolina, went to see his buddy and he said, oh my God, we're going to be millionaires. And you know, in the next week. And he said, it took about 30 years before he ever sold it like that again. Never, you know, it was a struggle for 20, 25 years of just never selling, you know, trying to sell it. But, you know, one of the reasons it was so hard for him to sell because he was a perfectionist and he wanted this to be the most beautiful product. You know, he always told everybody, I'm a horrible businessman. I'm not even I'm an artist. You know, I always want, you know, I want this product, you know, quality had to be first. Always, you know, and like you said, you've seen our product and you know the quality that it is, you know, and we've always been, that's, you know, even when I first started, I've been working now, oh my God, 26, 27 years here. So when I first started, I didn't know anything about the business. You know, I'd sort of graduated from college, was bartending, waiting tables. And I had dinner with my mom one night and she's just like, what are you going to do? You know, I'm like, I don't know. Doesn't Uncle John have a business? She's like, yeah. I was like, so I talked to him. I didn't honestly even know what he did. And at the time, the guy that was running everything for him was just done. Cause like I said, it was a struggle for years, just, you know, just barely getting by, not even getting, you know, I mean, just, you know, never selling thing. You know, that was always the thing, was the quality. You know, he imprinted on me. So when I first started working and learning and had it, it was always, no, it has to be quality first, you know, and that was the guy that he originally started with. They went their separate ways because the guy just wanted to sell. It was like, didn't matter what the quality was. So they remained friends to the day he died. They were good friends, but they just had two different visions, you know? So when we first started, the way it was before the internet was really off, they kind of decided, you know, when they split, well, his buddy would take North Carolina, because it would be the lower quality. He could sell it easier. And then John would take the rest of the country, really meant New York at the time. And, you know, that was the thing, you know, again, he always in my head, quality. We have to have the best quality. Doesn't matter. I don't care. I'd rather not sell it, you know, if it, we didn't sell the best flooring out there. And that was, you know, remained true for the whole time. And it remains true today, you know, is, you know, we do things that nobody else does, you know, and again, it costs us way more to do the process, but you know, that's what we remain is we're going to sell the best flooring in the country, no matter what it costs, what it takes.
Isn't that funny? The 30-year overnight success.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But it was, he always laughs when he tells that story because he came down and was like, we're going to be millionaires, you know, and never sold it like that again, ever, you know, just flew.
Okay. So here's the question I have for you. Yeah. You know, nowadays, reclaimed is incredibly popular. Because of, you know, look, the nature of wood is really interesting. It has to be high quality. And, you know, what a lot of people don't really understand the nature of wood, right? So if you have wood that is new and you put it in a warehouse over time, unless you use it, the grain starts to fade and the color of wood becomes, you know, monochromatic, unless you get certain species or unless it's been used before or unless it's been sealed, which seals in that grain, right?
Yeah.
So it's fascinating. Take me through the process of getting involved in the business and what you did with it, where the product originates from, and sort of taking this idea of reclaimed wood. And how did the idea start and who discovered it, which made you realize or your uncle realize and later you that, you know, this had some legs? Because what I also want to do is I want to get into the fact that you represent, you know, the very pinnacle of the industry, which brings celebrity, which brings starchitects, which brings the big name designers. And then you have a whole other set of issues that we'll get to. But start with that and sort of how you got to this point and how the business developed so that the product could be the star.
So the funny thing with the story I was telling about the heart pine that he bought, when we first started or he first started, that's what we sold. It was heart pine. That was kind of the first thing that came to the market. And the reason that he fell in love with it was just the beauty of it. And, you know, nowadays when people kind of think of pine, they think of yellowy, streaky, you know, not very pretty.
Softwood.
Exactly. But what we're doing, and we still do it to this day when we sell the hard pine, is we're selling the original virgin growth that was here in the United States. So it is the most beautiful. It's hard. It's unbelievable. It's all heart pine. So it's got this beautiful dark patina and the, you know, we're talking 13, 14 inch width boards that's just tight grain. So the funny story about it is most of our suppliers of the heart pine are from up north, because what happened is when they took down that virgin forest, you know, 200, 300 years ago, it was all from the south. It literally came from Virginia all the way down to like Texas, was just covered in it. And they basically built the north on this material. You know, we've gotten some joists and it'll have a marking on it where they've printed 1700, you know, from the 1700s. I mean, just unbelievable. But this material is just so beautiful. So when he started trying to finish and seeing what this looked like when you put finishing product on it, it gave you this dark, you know, 200 plus year old patina that was just so beautiful. You know, and that was what really captured, because, you know, when I mentioned earlier, you know, he always said, I'm not a businessman, I'm an artist. And he always saw himself that way as an artist. So it was the beauty of these things. You know, he had a really wonderful mind for the beauty of the product itself. You know, he could see what could be done. Again, not a good businessman, but was just, you know, just saw the potential. You know, he knew how beautiful and how different this was. So, you know, this company, when we started out, it was all heart pine. That's what we sold. And what happened as it started getting popular, you know, within 10, you know, years or so of us doing this, all of a sudden, all these little companies started popping up and they were selling, you know, heart pine. Well, it started going from this beautiful product to just whatever they could get out there, you know, and the market got oversaturated and everybody was selling heart pine reclaimed material. So at that point, and I, you know, this has now been 20 plus years, we kind of made a pivot to the oak. And what he started doing, and again, we were the first people to really do this, is we were fuming the oak. Are you familiar with that process at all?
No, I'm not.
So fuming, if you've seen oak, it's, you know, a new oak, a white oak is really what we do. It's kind of a lighter, almost beige type color.
Yeah.
But if you've ever seen European oak, and European oak has got more of a brownish, beautiful brown tone color. Well, what's happened, that European oak is because it's 300, 400, 500, 600 years old, and it's had time to age. And white oak has this natural chemical, tannic acid, in it. And what happens as that wood ages, that tannic acid starts coming out and starts darkening the boards. So what we do, you know, what the European oak has had that time. So if you took like a piece of new oak and you just kind of let it sit for 300, 400 years, eventually that light piece of wood will become dark. So what we figured out with the fuming process, it's an old furniture trick, is that you can take ammonia hydroxide, and you basically, we've created these kiln systems where we basically put the ammonia hydroxide to the flooring, and we're aging. Even though the wood is already, you know, 100, 200 years old, we're aging it 400, 500, 600 years, and we're doing it naturally.
Are you also, so you, at the same time, you're also drying it?
Well, so we fume it first, and then once, basically what ammonia is just a gas. So what we do is, when, you know, we have a kiln and we have other systems, and when we have too much going in the kiln, but basically we're just putting the gas to the wood. And what happens is that tannic acid is attracted to the ammonia. That's what we found. So it pulls it out of the wood itself. So what we do is, you know, we fume it first, and then once it's fumed, then we dry it in the kiln system.
So it's amazing. So now you've got this beautiful product, but you also do amazing things with it. There is an artistry to what you do. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, you know, once we figured out, you know, this getting this beautiful color to the wood, you know, this, and it, what people love about it is that it's natural. You know, you look at it, you don't lose any of your grain. You don't, it, you know, because it's just pulling the color out of the wood. So when we sell it, you don't have to do any staining. You know, the problem that people do these days is everybody just takes a cheap floor, they put a coat of stain on it, and then they finish it. Well, the stain is this really thick oil based stains. So you don't even see the floor anymore. You don't see the grain. You're just really looking at the stain, you know, whatever the stain is. So the fuming is just, it's natural. And that's what everybody always, you know, when we are starting out and doing this and perfecting it. And that's what everybody was like, oh, it's just so natural. It's so beautiful. You know, we tried finding other, you know, I always get that. It's so funny with all our woods. I'll get somebody saying, well, we tried to match it up. We tried to find other products. We just couldn't do it. You know, and it's like, well, you know, it's a natural fume is just different. They even make stains now where it's called a fuming stain. But it's not the real deal. It's not, you know, it's not a natural thing, you know. So that really creates this beautiful look that is just beautiful. It's just unmatched.
So over time, the idea of reclaimed wood became incredibly popular. And then you find yourself in competition for virgin material, not virgin material, but once used material.
Yeah, reclaimed.
So how do you find, so then the pandemic happens, and I'm fast forwarding a lot, but what that did was that hyper accelerated desire for product.
Yeah. Yeah.
How has that affected your business and what you do now?
So that's become an issue because, you know, before pre-pandemic, you know, I had probably 4 or 5 solid, you know, suppliers. These were guys that I called, you know, when I needed it, you know, or they would call me, you know, actually turn, you know, they would call me and say, hey, we know what you like. You know, over the years, we got to the point, my guys didn't send me stuff that I couldn't use. You know,
they found a barn and you were the first guy they called.
Yeah. And, you know, we were using the highest quality wood. You know, I was, you know, it sort of would be, the guys know what I would like. You know, it got over the years to the point where they wouldn't send me material that wasn't up to what we provide. You know, it had to be tight grain, long, you know, beautiful material. So we had all the, so it wasn't really a problem at that point. You know, we had, I had enough guys and there was enough material, barns, mostly where we get our stuff, especially the oak is out of barns. And they usually come out of Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio. Those are kind of the big white oak states. So we had no problem getting it. Then we hit the pandemic. All of a sudden, you know, all these guys are no longer supplying it. You know, there, and I have my main guy is in Virginia. He's he became my only guy, you know, at the point. So it was, you know, and I'm trying, there's a website called Wood Planet where you can advertise if you're selling or you can ask if you're wanting it. Pre-pandemic, sometimes if I needed stuff and I didn't have enough, I would put an ad in there. I'd get 15 guys, you know, calling me, you know, within a day or two during the pandemic. I put ads in there. One time I got no responses, and the other times maybe one, maybe two, and they usually didn't lead to anything. So, you know, that became a problem. You know, my big guy in Ohio. So I told you earlier, backtracking a little bit, we use white oak because the fuming process only takes the white oak. Red oak, which is the other big product of oak, it doesn't have a lot of tannic acid in it, so it doesn't fume as well. So I can't really use it. And it's not as nice as the white oak. So my guys in pre-pandemic would always separate for me. Well, come pandemic, they don't have the time or the manpower to be separating. So, you know, and I couldn't take the chance that I'd order, say, 5,000 feet of wood, and I'm now paying a premium price for it, and I get it, and it's all red oak. I can't use it, or it's, you know, say 20% red oak. So now I'm paying quadruple what, you know, what I was paying before. So it became a problem. It's picked up a little bit now, you know, where my Ohio guy's back now. He got enough people working where he can separate some, but he's still not as productive as he was before because, again, manpower.
And what's amazing too is, and again, I kind of want to circle back on this, not for the purpose of celebrity, but for what celebrity does to a business and for what celebrity does to a product. You have become this premier choice of celebrity designers, starchitects, I mean, big names. Where did that leap come from? Do you remember who your first celebrity client was? And, you know, how did that happen for you?
Well, it became, you know, it's kind of funny. You know, over the years, we've done very little advertising. You know, as I mentioned earlier, John, you know, went up to New York, you know, to do that sale, the first sale he did. Well, that's how kind of he continued to do it. He would go to New York, and his parents still lived up there in Brooklyn. So he would go visit them, but he'd go and he'd just go to architect firms, you know, firm after firm, and just kind of, you know, have a few samples here and there. And over the years, we really just became a word of mouth company, you know, and I want to say years ago, and a lot of times we don't find out who the client, we know it's a high end client, but they don't want to know, you know, let us know who it is. But, you know, I think one of the first ones was Steven Spielberg. We did his for years. Like, this was years ago. But, you know, it's just a word of mouth thing. You know, it's amazing because, you know, the funny thing is we found when we advertised, we did things in magazines and here, it really didn't do us a lot because we just kind of became so high end that it was, you know, the big time architects, the designers, is like they all of a sudden knew who we were, and they knew the quality that we did and the different, you know, it's just different than what other people were doing. And it just spread like that, you know, and they, you know, they would always, when they would have a big, you know, like a celebrity or a, you know, wealthy client that they knew they could afford the, you know, the nicest floor in the country, they would always direct them to us, you know? So it just really, you know, it's, you know, we owe a lot to a lot of the architects and designers because they're the ones that really pushed us to their clients.
So where is the mill? It's in North Carolina, right? And tell me about the mill.
So we're in this very little town in North Carolina, almost in the middle of it. If you know North Carolina, we're about 30 minutes west of Raleigh, which is the capital, and 15 minutes south of Chapel Hill. So where actually I grew up, where the University of North Carolina is. So my uncle, when he moved down here, now it's been 50, you know, when he moved down here, his wife at the time was going to the University of North Carolina. And he kind of moved more to the country. He always liked the country side, you know. And so it's a very little small town. And probably about 30 years ago, he was searching for the perfect product. And you got to remember, my uncle is very eccentric and an artist, you know. So he spent years looking for the perfect property that he wanted. He had his vision, you know, he was going to build a big mill, but he also wanted a big lake on it. So he found this property and there was a swamp to it. And everybody told him, don't buy this property. Don't buy this property. You'll never do what you want. Well, it was like a 90 acre old farm. He never listened to anybody. You know, he was very hard headed and had, you know, his thing. So he bought this property. And, you know, before we had this property, we were in the middle of town in Pittsburgh. There was a little fuel house. This is a very old country town at the time. And there's a fuel house. We just had behind it, we rented space in the middle of town. We had tarps, no covers. And it just, you know, we had a couple machines here and we did everything there. So we kind of made that transition slowly to this property, which was about 5 miles outside of town. So we're still close to the town, but, you know, like I said, 90 acres. And then his dream was to have this lake. And we built it ourselves. I mean, there were years when we'd had no work. So all guys would be working on the building, working on the lake. We built this 12 acre lake on the property. And it's like it goes 20 feet deep. You know, it kind of falls off. I think we had 50,000 truckloads of dirt that we did ourselves. We had, you know, we did everything to it except build the dam. You know, we had to hire a company, we had to get the engineers to build this dam. And it's amazing. I mean, it is just, you know, it's one of those things, again, it just, you don't see the vision. And then when you see it, it's just amazing, you know. And we have, you know, my kids are now 22 and 18, but when they were little, I mean, we still go out there a lot during the summer. We had jet ski out there, boat, you know, small little boat, and, you know, have people over, barbecues. And it was just, you know, an amazing thing, you know, when you see it. And the cool thing about it is, so the building and all our wood is kind of in the back half of the property. So when you pull in and it's just this little dirt road, and it's funny, when I always have trucks come in to pick up or deliver, there's no signs. He didn't want anybody to know that this was a business. We're on basically an old residential road. There's, you know, no businesses on the road. And all you see, and I always tell people, look for these two big giant rocks. And this is another funny story of my uncle when they were building this highway through Pittsburgh, and they were, you know, digging the ground, and they would pull these, like, I'm talking boulders, not just rocks, massive boulders. So he went there and said, well, I want these rocks in there. Well, you can have them. You just got to get them out. You know, they're on the side, and they were so heavy that these cranes would come. And I mean, barely could lift one at a time. And we'd put it on, they're only going a truck, and we brought them out. And two of them now are standing straight up, like right at the beginning of the driveway. So I always tell the truck drivers, it's not like a regular business. There's no signs. Just look for the two big giant rocks, make a big turn, come in, and then go all the way to the back, and then you'll see the building. So you come in and there's just kind of trees on the side. And then you look, you come up a little bit, and then there's the lake on the left. There's an old farmhouse, the original farmhouse on the right. Doesn't look like a business at all still, you know. And as you go down the road, all of a sudden it opens up, and then our building is kind of in the back corner, and we have a 25,000 square foot mill. And this is another funny story with the building. So the building has no sides on it. You know, it's open. It's got a top.
It's a mill.
I'm sorry?
It's a mill.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, you know, most you go to most mills and it's just, you know, square building, rectangle building, size, close. He didn't want that. He wanted light. He loved light. You know, he wanted his building to get light. He wanted the sides open, which it's beautiful and it's great, you know, especially spring and fall. It's just right now, it's just unbelievable with the weather nice. Summer, winter, it gets a little hot, a little cold. But that was, his vision was to have this open building, you know, where all the sides are open. It's the light, natural light. He was always about natural light. So, yeah, it's amazing, man. And we've been here now. Now 25 plus years, you know, about that much time.
Kind of a quirky, weird question for you. I'm just curious, over time, have you found some really cool things to pick out of the wood, musket balls, arrowheads, interesting carvings? Do you find anything in the wood?
A little bit. We found some, you know, some arrowheads before, but yeah, not much. It's, you know, and I haven't explored, like I said, it's 90 acres. So I haven't done a ton of exploring on it. Where my office is kind of hard to see, you can kind of see back. And my office is kind of in the middle. Another thing that he built, this was an old building and he built plaster. I don't know if you can see the wind. So it's basically has glass all the way around, except for, you know, a few little spots here. But it's in the middle of the woods and my view, I can see the lake through the woods right there. But I have like deer come through all the time, you know, squirrels that sit there. So yeah, we're really in a rural area, you know, in where we're at. And it's really nice. Everybody who comes visits here is just like, wow, this is amazing. You know, especially when I have architects and designers that are coming from New York City. You know, yeah. This is just like a whole different thing, you know? It's nice. It's peaceful. That's what, you know, even the years where we didn't sell anything and, you know, and if we couldn't really pay high wages to the guys but everybody loved working here because it's such a good environment. It's such a nice, peaceful environment, you know, and everybody always got along and it was just a nice place to work, you know, it still is, you know, even though now we're busy, you know, so busy that it's crazy, you know,
No, that's cool. And the product is absolutely beautiful. You've sent me some pictures, which thank you. I love that. For those who want to go see it, check the link in the show notes, which will take you to social. It'll take you to some of the images so you can see. It's the product is one thing, but it's not just the product. It's what you can do with the product just to create some absolutely stunning one-off material. It's gorgeous. And I think that's the difference, right? This is an artistic product. It's not a commodity. It's not lumber. This is an artistic product.
Oh, absolutely. And that's, you know, some of the things that we do that nobody else does. And I'll just, you know, you couldn't see it in the pictures, but one of the main thing we do that nobody else does. And it's what's beautiful about this process is preserves long boards because reclaim, you know, you can have a lot of damage on boards, your holes here and all that stuff. So what we actually started doing is what we call plugs and splines. And what that is, so say you got a 12-foot board. Well, you got a 12-foot board, but you got, you know, several holes in it. So if you don't do that, what you have to cut the board and you got a bunch of smaller pieces. We actually, what we'll do is we'll cut off a little piece from the end of the board. So we're using the same board and we put a plug where that hole is. We've got a router. We'll put a nice circle plug or we'll do little splines, which are like rectangular or sometimes called Dutchman. And we'll take that piece and we'll put it in there. So you've got this beautiful look and people love them because it just looks so just fabulous, you know? And so, but the biggest thing it does is preserves long boards. Cause I've had so many clients call me and, you know, other companies, they don't take the care, you know, nobody does that because it's expensive. You know, we have a guy, we have a table set up and we have guys, that's all they do is once they just put plug and splines all day long. But I've had clients and they're, you know, they call me and said, well, we were promised these 15-foot boards and we got them and they got 3, 4, 5 holes in them. So basically it's 3-footers, you know? And so that's just part of the craft that we do, you know, is that we preserve everything, you know, we don't want to waste anything, you know, especially anything beautiful. So, and it's just amazing. Everybody loves those. You know, another thing that we do is, so the boards, Well, we always said their original surface. You know, we always use the face of it, especially the heart pine, because it's got the patina. So it's got natural contour to it. So we're not playing in that flat. We're just skip planing it to remove the rough. And then we leave all the patina. We don't want to get rid of that. So what that does, and I don't know if you've ever been in a really old house, you know, that's got like a 200-year-old floor, and you look at the floor and it just kind of rolls along. Well, that's from 200 years of people walking on the floor. That's the natural contour. So what we do is we preserve that. So when you look at our floors, and you can see it in the picture, it's even more amazing in person, but you notice that it's not a flat floor, and it's got natural contour, and we keep that, we preserve that, you know, and we'll even pre-sand, you know, where we actually hand sand the boards. Here's another thing. Most people, when they sand flooring, they have big machines and it's just a flat sander, it just flats. We actually have what's called stroke sanders. And what they are is a guy's basically sanding them by hand. You know, he sits there, we've got these graphite gloves, and it's a big stroke. It's a big machine sander with a big belt that comes here. And what he does is he presses down and he goes with the contour of the floor so we don't lose that. Again, these are all things that are really expensive and time consuming to do. But John always insisted, you know, this is what we have to do. It has to be the best. And, you know, that's really how you get the best quality is you have to really care to do it, you know. And what's happened, and I won't name any names, but some of these companies that we started at the same time as us, and they've gotten way bigger than we have, make, you know, many more sales. I get people calling all the time just saying, it was like 50% waste. The wood is just tearing, you know, because they've gotten to the point where they don't care anymore. It's just get rid of it, get it out. So they throw anything. And a lot of these companies sometimes now they're so big, they don't even do it themselves. They just hire another company that basically produces the wood and then they send it out. You think they care what the quality is? They don't care. They just, you know, they're trying to produce it and get it out. So that part of it has actually gotten worse, you know, with, you know, I get more calls about that where, you know, oh, this quality was just terrible, you know, and that's what we've always stuck it in. It's always been, no matter if we were making no money, you know, making no sales or having a lot of sales, quality always had to come first.
I love that. I really do. Sam, it's so funny, as busy as you are, it's taken us quite a while to get this time together, yeah. but listen, I am so incredibly thankful for it. I really appreciate the time today. Thank you. And, you know, again, just remember that Baba Antique Wooden Flooring is available from Design Hardware and proudly. And it's amazing what designers and architects artistically, creatively get to do with your product. It's got to be a joy for you to see it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool. You know, and it's just, yeah, it's such a good, great product. There's just so many things you can do, you know, different colors, and it's just amazing. It's fun. I always love seeing when I can get, you know, it's funny with the pictures that I was telling you, it's sometimes hard to get pictures because our clients are, you know, they don't want you to take pictures, or we're dealing with such high end architects and designers that they like to, you know, they're always producing books. So they want to keep their pictures. So it's hard for me to get pictures, but when I do, I just love it. You know, I especially like seeing the whole thing from the install, you know, all the way through. You can kind of see, you know, just the beauty of the whole process. Yeah, it's amazing to see, for sure.
Yeah, and I love it. Sam, thanks for the time today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
This has been another episode of Doctoring Up Design, a podcast created by Design Hardware. Thank you, Michelle Solomons and Avi Balsam with Design Hardware, for making this platform available and for your tireless support of the design and architecture community. Again, thank you, Sam, for sharing your story. And thank you for listening and subscribing to Doctoring Up Design. Please make sure you are subscribing to the show so you don't miss a single episode. You can find us everywhere you find your favorite podcasts. And you can check and if you're looking for links to our guests, you can find them in the show notes. Thanks for listening. See you next time.